This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Michael Monks. With Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and the city of Cincinnati under states of emergency because of the coronavirus and COVID-19, many have questions about what it all means and what's being done to protect people from the illness. We'll hear today from a doctor about what you should do to take care of yourself and your family and how Ohio's primary election Tuesday may be affected. But first, joining me is Hamilton County's Director of the Emergency Management and Homeland Security Agency, Nick Crosley. Nick, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, of course. Thank you for asking me to be on.
I'd like to start out first just letting people know what your agency is, what it does. Tell us what your role is in this whole emergency.
So the Emergency Management Agency coordinates countywide disaster response and recovery, mitigation, and preparedness. So we maintain all of the countywide emergency notification systems, so the outdoor warning sirens, Alert Hamilton County, the wireless emergency alerts, those kinds of things. And then we also work with our communities on planning, training, and exercises based on all of the hazards that we might face in Hamilton County. And then, of course, we have a robust public education information. And then we manage, we have an emergency operations center. We have a staff that coordinates our hazardous materials facilities and our hazardous materials planning, response planning. And then we manage all the Homeland Security grants that the region receives and all the equipment that is purchased with that funding. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now since coronavirus has become an issue, since we're under a state of emergency in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, the city of Cincinnati as well. What has your role in that process been, and what are you doing to help keep people informed?
So our role as a countywide agency is to support the public health departments and agencies in Hamilton County. So we primarily work with Hamilton County's public health agency, but we also assist the other three, Cincinnati Health, as well as Norwood and Springdale, as needed.
And so what are you doing right now?
So we're trying to anticipate what the needs might need. So we help facilitate if there's any resource requests. We are working with our communities and the county on their continuity of operations planning to make sure that we can continue to provide governmental services. We are, of course, monitoring the spread of the virus all day, every day. We're working with public health, so if they need assistance, so they have their statutory requirements that they do in a public health emergency, and if they need help, we help augment that help for them. And so we also advise the Board of County Commissioners on, for example, the state of emergency they're voting on later today and what that means. And then pretty much anything else anybody might need to, if we're able to find a resource or call the state or work through the state to the federal government if a resource is needed.
Tell us about that. We do know the Hamilton County Commission meets at 1 o'clock today to vote on a state of emergency. And you say you explain to them what that is. What is it? What will it mean?
So states of emergency at the county and the city level really free up the county to for example, we can make purchases if we need to a little bit more quickly. We can work with county employees and others if we need volunteers to help with the community response and recovery. We can it's fairly limited, if you will. But I think that the major thing that a declaration of emergency does is really it shows that we've been monitoring this event since before March 1st. We went to what we call emergency action level 2, which is monitoring, on March 2nd. So it shows the public that this is a very serious situation, and we're focusing a lot of our efforts on engaging with the public and the private sector and our nonprofit sector and whoever else to encourage personal preparedness and personal awareness so that we can really try to mitigate the community spread, which we saw up in the first case of it in Ohio in Stark County. And so that's almost our primary focus is really, I mean, the virus is somewhere. It's obviously in Ohio. It's in Kentucky. It's in Indiana. We're a tri-state area. So what we need to do now is focus on making sure people stay healthy and that they follow the guidance of our public health and the governor and the state public health to practice good hygiene and really work to stop the spread of the virus.
I think a lot of people have been getting a lot of information about what they should do, having food in their home. Clearly, people are concerned about things like toilet paper. It seems that that's hard to get these days. But what kind of things do you think now that this has gotten to this level that people should be doing to make sure they're ready for whatever comes next?
Well, it's interesting that we have this virus threat as we speak, and then in Hamilton County or in the tri-state tonight, we have a severe weather threat. And so I really echo what interim County Public Health Director Kesterman said, where he talked about this is sort of all hazards preparedness. So if this is the incident or the event that drives people to start thinking about their personal preparedness, it doesn't hurt to have 2 weeks of worth of food and water on hand. That can help if you are quarantined and can't get to the store, or if there's some kind of barrier to that. It helps people evaluate, what do I need in the way of medications? Should I not be able to leave my home? So I think it really raises that awareness of what they should be doing.
Let's talk a little bit about your whole team and what all of you are doing. How do you meet? Who do you meet with? And how do you make your decisions?
So we have an internal team within emergency management. Right now, we're working primarily with public health and with our public information team to make sure that we are both monitoring the situation, anticipating any resources that we need. So I have somebody focused on resource management, making sure that we have the capability if we need to purchase a resource or if we need to request it from the state. Are regionally, that we have the ability to do that. We are planning constantly. We are right after the meeting this afternoon, we're meeting as an internal team to start looking at what our EOC operations look like moving forward. And then just really engaging with our public health partners and our community partners. We engage with all 49 communities in Hamilton County. We're constantly sending information. We're hearing from them. We're engaging with our public safety partners. Passing on information of how to be safe, and just really, it's a lot of coordination, and it's a lot of communication is what we're doing at this point. And then, of course, now we have been, but now we're going to continue and intensify our planning efforts.
So, what are you hearing from them? I mean, we now know what you do. Tell us what that means to people right now. What are you hearing about? What are you planning for at this level?
I think at our level, we are planning for the more widespread. And so that's why we're planning to increase our public outreach. So that's the biggest thing that we can do. We are considering, what does quarantine look like? Obviously, we definitely prefer home quarantine. We're working with our healthcare partners on what might be the impact to our healthcare community, principally the hospitals and the emergency rooms. We are working with to make sure our message is consistent across all entities in the county so that there's not any confusion about what we're advising that people do. So I think it's all of those things combined. It's sort of circular. And then, of course, we do anticipate, although we've been fairly steady the last 24 hours, maybe it won't, but we do anticipate an increase in the number of confirmed cases.
And you have an emergency operation in place now, and it's in the next stage at this point?
We'll go to partial staffing of that. So we'll be doing a mix of both in-person staffing. We'll meet and go over our plans and procedures and sort of walk through any contingencies that we need to have in place. And then we'll do a lot of virtual work as well, so that you sort of practice what you preach on the social distancing issue and working remotely. But as long as we can communicate and as long as we're on the same page, a lot of the work that we do can be done from virtually anywhere.
Now, we did hear from Ohio Governor Mike DeWine in his news conference yesterday that he'd be even talking more today about mass gathering and large events and those sorts of things. And I want to let everyone know that we will be bringing you Governor DeWine's news conference at 2 o'clock this afternoon live here on 91.7. So that'll be at 2 o'clock. This afternoon, you can hear Governor DeWine's news conference. But in talking about that and what you heard yesterday, did that make you go into another level and decide you had to do more things? I mean, we're hearing things now that the Major League Soccer has suspended games for 30 days. The Big Ten, the SEC, the AAC have all canceled those college basketball games. Does that make your job easier when those big events get canceled?
Well, I don't know that it has a huge. I think it does, because then we're again, Governor DeWine is I believe showing a great leadership, and the public health director for Ohio and our local public health directors are showing great leadership in both A, requiring, or B, encouraging the cancellation of these events where we could have a larger community spread. So does it make our job easier? We hope so. I think that's the whole intention of either encouraging or requiring large events to not happen, is that we sort of mitigate or prevent community spread until we can get an appropriate vaccine or whatever else happens. I'm not a medical expert, that the virus starts to stop spreading as much.
Now, do you track that info? Do you get it from the state? How do you recognize when things are?
We get it from the state. I'm actually looking at one of the updates they send us. We have a real-time updater, and we keep it on our office wall so that we can monitor those cases. And then, of course, we're in constant consultation with Hamilton County Public Health, so that we're especially concerned with Hamilton County and then our neighboring counties as it gets closer to us.
And what kind of contact do you have with the neighboring counties?
What are you looking for? We met with our counterparts in Ohio this morning, and it's really, and then we're in contact with our counterparts in Kentucky and Indiana. We're really just wanting to understand how they're addressing the issues so that we can anticipate any questions or concerns on in Hamilton County. And then I think in a lot of ways, all the stuff that we're all doing is almost the same. Because it's working through our public health departments, doing the public outreach, and we're just sort of aligning, if you will. We're using a lot of the CDC and ODH messaging. Kentucky, of course, uses Kentucky, but a lot of this starts at the CDC messaging. And then the activities themselves, the states coordinate, tri-state activities through their respective EOCs. So it's really just being aware of any challenges they're facing, because with any bi-state or tri-state area like we have, people live in Kentucky, work in Hamilton County, and vice versa. They live, a lot of people live outside Hamilton County and commute into the county. And so it's good for us to be aware of how they're messaging their residents. Are they experiencing any major issues, any outbreaks of concern or anything like that? So we're in constant communication about anything like that.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Michael Monks. We continue our discussion with Hamilton County Director of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, Nick Crosley. And I failed to give the phone number before. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email questions to talk@wvxu.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Nick, I wanted to talk with you about the alert site that you have. Now, people can go to HamiltonCountyOhioEMA.org, and then what do they do and what will they get if they sign up for these alerts?
So we set up this alert so that residents of Hamilton County or people who work in Hamilton County can receive real-time either ongoing alerts from us on how to mitigate the impact of the COVID-19 or coronavirus flu, or if we for some reason had to send out some kind of immediate message, that they would already be signed up for it and could get it directly from, in this case, Hamilton County Public Health or Cincinnati Public Health or the other two health departments. So that way they're getting information. And the website itself has all kinds of resources and public health information so that they can do it. So it's really, they can share it with their own organizations. We're trying to reach out to businesses and nonprofit organizations, schools, wherever it might be. So we've set up a lot of resources for parents, tips, guidance on spring break and travel, student travel, just all kinds of stuff on here, but especially promoting going to alerthc.org and people sign up for our COVID-19. But they can also sign up to receive alerts from basically every hazard that may impact Hamilton County and in a community. And so I really encourage them to take a look at it and also sign up for Smart 911 at the same time.
Now, I will say I signed up for this earlier this week myself. And one of the things that I noticed is that you don't have to live in Hamilton County. If you work in Hamilton County, you also can sign up to get these alerts. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Yes. You just enter the address that's in. So any kind of geocoded alert, it'll use the address that you put in the system. But we definitely encourage people, if you live and or work in Hamilton County, that you sign up for our system.
And these can go to your phone, they can go to your computer, they can go to your mobile phone, your home phone, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. You can sign up for, especially, we have 7 alerts that you can get phone calls for, and the rest of them you can get text and emails. But with COVID-19 alerts, if we send out a phone message, you'll receive that on whatever phone number you put in. We also use text and email as well.
And what kind of things might people get? I mean, will this break into their phone and become loud even if the sound is off? So if something happens in the middle of the night, I mean, how does that work?
No, it will not do that. So that, I'm not even sure a wireless emergency alert would break into the phone, although we're in charge of those as well. This is more if your phone is on and your phone will alert you for these different things. Now, you can set up your own alert within an iPhone, but I'm sure with an Android, where it can override your silence alerts. But our normal everyday alerts only go out during regular hours, so we're not sending out non-emergency alerts at 2 a.m. And I don't know that I anticipate anything happening, but it could. I just don't anticipate anything having to go out at 2 a.m. For the coronavirus. But I think we're going to send out preparedness information. We're going to send out preparedness reminders. We're going to send out anything that changes. So, again, we want to be very transparent so the public knows what's going on as best, you know, whatever we know the public should know. And so we're forwarding that information, and this is a great way to hand that directly to either the resident or the worker that's in Hamilton County.
Now, have you had any COVID alerts that you've sent out, COVID-19 alerts that you've sent out already?
Yes, we've sent out, again, the general preparedness information, so that we're trying to remind people, here's what you can do to protect yourself and your family. And we're developing a communications plan right now. We're going to communicate regularly through this event. I think it's important to remind people that this is something you have to be, I mean, you have to be alert of all hazards all the time. But this is something that's very real right now, and it's spreading across the country, and it's already spread across the world. And so we are going to be somewhat aggressive, as is the governor and others, about reminding people to be alert and be aware and take care of themselves.
What other things do you want people to know as we go through what is now called a pandemic?
I think that this is the time to be prepared and not panic, as it were. I mean, I can understand people wanting to be prepared. I've still got to read a report on the psychology of the toilet paper. But I think it's good to be prepared. This is a marathon, not a sprint. Much like flu season, this is not the same as the flu. It's a little bit different. And I think they're still figuring out the whole size and scope of the virus. But we'll get there. And that if people follow the advice of our health department, of the state health department, the CDC, that they can really, really mitigate. The state health director showed yesterday how if people follow the advice of local health, if they follow the guidelines of how to take care of themselves and their family and their friends, that we can really mitigate the community spread of coronavirus and get past this event. And then, you know, we're just waiting for the vaccine to come out whenever that comes out.
Have you done any study of what's been happening in Italy? Because I know things there certainly ramped up quickly. Do you have any concern that things could ramp up as quickly here?
I know that we have a very robust healthcare system, and we've also had the benefit of watching it overseas as it came to the United States. And I think that, again, as long as people take this seriously and they listen to our leaders, if they listen to our public health leaders and our political leaders, like Governor DeWine and Interim Director Kesterman and the other health directors, that I don't see it spreading like that here. Now, I could be wrong, but I feel like we have a robust medical system. We have a robust testing system that is ramping up. And we can definitely, I feel, throughout the country have the resources to treat the virus that, you know, my gut feeling is, and then having worked as an emergency manager during the H1N1 event, that I think we can keep this with moderate to minimal impact. However, that could change, and that's why we are working so hard on mitigating or canceling public events and things like that so we can try to keep the community spread under control.
In just a very short time that we have left, you had some sort of virtual town hall now available on Facebook that people can link into. Is that correct?
We do. If you go to either Facebook or the Hamilton County YouTube page, we did a meeting, if you will, for our local community. So we do a lot of outreach to our local the 49 communities in Hamilton County, and those are advertised that anybody could sit in on. And so it's the same thing that we're putting out on our website, but we're just trying to answer the questions to make sure all of our governments are prepared, both internally, you know, but much like private companies, government has to be prepared to continue the business of government during an event like this, but also respond to their community. But then we also want to make sure they understand the virus and how to mitigate it, both in their within their offices as well as their community.
I want to thank you so much for being here. I want to remind our listeners of this coronavirus disease update, information preparedness tips that you have. We're going to have a link to that on our website, WVXU.org. And if you go there, you'll be able to sign up for that. Click on that link and sign up for that. You have been so helpful. Thank you so much for being here today. At least
Thank
on the phone
very
with
much
me.
For your time.
We've been talking about how Hamilton County's Emergency Management and Homeland Security is preparing for coronavirus. My guest has been Director Nick Crosley. In just a moment, we'll hear from a doctor about how you can take care of yourself to help prevent getting COVID-19 and what to do if you are sick. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Michael Monks. I'm joined by Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Medical Director for Emergency Management at UC Health, Dr. Dustin Calhoun. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Calhoun.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us on.
We've been talking, of course, about the coronavirus and COVID-19, and I think what we'd like to find out today are what are the symptoms people should be looking for? I mean, I think anybody, no matter how they're feeling, if they're not feeling 100% or worried that this might be it, what are the symptoms for this particular illness?
So the symptoms for this virus, for the virus or for the illness COVID-19, are primarily three things. So fever can be there, and that's the most common thing we see. Anywhere from 70 to 90% of patients will have fever. And then shortness of breath and cough. The cough could be wet or dry, so we don't want to be too specific with that. So cough, shortness of breath, and fever are the things people should look for. It can come with a few other things. You'll see some people with headaches. You can see some GI illness, some general muscle aches, the kind of things that you might see with the flu. But the primary three are cough, shortness of breath, and fever.
And if that happens to somebody and they have those symptoms, should they call the doctor? Should they go into the doctor? What steps should they take at that point?
So that's a really, really good question, because that's where a lot of issues are arising right now. So there's this balance that we have to strike between following the disease and isolating people and knowing who has the disease and where it is, and simply using resources carefully and protecting the population. So at this point, we have a limited amount of testing that we can do, and we know that the vast majority of these people that get the disease are going to be fine. We know that about 80% of them have basically a simple cold kind of symptoms, and they're not going to be requiring hospitalization. So that vast majority, that 80%, would be fine simply staying home. I think it's really, really important to recognize that if you have a fever, you have a cough, you have shortness of breath, you really should be isolating yourself from others anyways. You shouldn't be going to work with those symptoms, and you shouldn't be exposing your family by coughing on them or by not using really good hand hygiene or cough hygiene. So regardless of what the name of the disease that you have, whether you have a cold with rhinovirus or you have COVID-19 with coronavirus, you should be practicing those things. So if you have these symptoms and you're concerned about it, but you're a relatively healthy individual and you don't think that you need immediate medical intervention, you don't need somebody to admit you to the hospital or give you special medicines or anything like that, then for the most part, it is very reasonable to remain in your home, keep yourself isolated away, don't expose your family if you can, definitely don't go to work. And certainly giving your doctor a call, letting them know that this is going on is reasonable. But I don't want people to feel like they absolutely have to get the test for this, because what happens then is people wind up feeling that they need to go to their doctor, they need to go to the emergency department just to get an answer about do they or don't they have this particular virus. And that lends to difficulties to them, as well as exposing possibly uninfected individuals at these healthcare facilities to the virus that don't necessarily need to be exposed.
So how do you decide then who should go to the doctor? I mean, you talk about relatively healthy people. Certainly there are a lot of elderly people who this could be at greater risk for, people, as many have talked about, who have compromised immune systems. At what point should they consider, hey, this is bad enough, I need to go to the doctor?
Absolutely. So those are always very difficult decisions, even when we're not talking about something like COVID-19. You're right that there are people that are more at risk. Though those people that are more at risk, what they're more at risk for is a bad outcome from when they have the disease. So you're right. You're talking about people in the higher ends of age. So depending on what source you're looking at, over 50, over 60, is where you have an increased risk of more severe disease if you acquire the virus. People with what we call comorbidities, other illnesses, things like lung disease or heart disease or diabetes, we actually don't know for sure whether or not immunocompromised, though that usually does increase your risk to have problems. We don't know for sure that in this case does increase your risk of a bad outcome. So those people are at higher risk to have bad outcomes. But ultimately, the decision of whether you should seek medical care is the same decision you would normally make. So if you're at home and you're feeling poorly and you have the flu, or you're at home and you're feeling poorly and you have a cold, you have to make that decision for yourself. Do you feel that you are well enough to come in, to stay at home and take care of yourself and keep yourself hydrated and use over-the-counter medicines to take care of yourself? Or do you feel that you need assistance, that you need a medical professional to probably put you in the hospital and help you out with those things? That's the decision that people make every day, every time they're ill. And there really, to be very honest, isn't anything different about this disease that should make them change that decision-making paradigm. They should assess themselves and decide, do they need that help or not? Because there isn't a special treatment for this, and there isn't something particularly different about this assessment. If they feel that their symptoms are well enough that they can take care of them at home, that is usually, in most people, a reasonable decision.
I'm talking with Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Medical Director for Emergency Management at UC Health, Dr. Dustin Calhoun. If you have a question, 513-419-7100. And we go now to, and I hope I'm saying this correctly, Sakur. Sakur, what's your question?
Hello.
Yes, what's your question, Sakur?
Hey, how are you? I don't know. I couldn't hear you if you pronounced the name, but it's Sakur. But I just want to say hello to you. Oh, that's okay. That's okay to you and the doctor. And doctor, this is a question, if you could help me, because it's just the uncertainty. I have family that's in the town that has 5 cases in Kentucky, which is Cynthiana, Kentucky, Harrison County. I have a funeral that I'm going to this weekend. I'm just so leery about even going. If I decide to go, is there any way you think I should govern myself? Should I get a mask, or how should I go about it? Because I'm telling you, I'm just so uncertain about really going just because of everything that's going on and the fact that they got 5 cases in this small town. I'll hang up and just listen to you how you think I should go about it if I decide to go. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Dr. Calhoun, what do you advise people that may be going into an area where there are cases of confirmed cases of coronavirus, COVID-19?
That's a great question. I'm sure that's on the mind of a lot of people, whether it's going to a different town or just simply going to a gathering of a lot of people here in Cincinnati itself. So I think it's first, he's made the right step. The first step is to realize that there is some risk to gatherings. And I think the risk he's facing there is more related to the gathering, the funeral, more so than the particular location of the gathering at this time. So the things to consider are your necessity for doing it. If you're going to a sporting event, that's probably a different necessity to you than going to a family funeral. But then once you've made the decision to go, ways to protect yourself are kind of the common things that we advise people to do. Good hand hygiene. Washing your hands frequently, 20 seconds soap and water, or carrying around a little bottle of the 60% or greater alcohol hand sanitizer. Cough hygiene, being wary of other people. So watching your surroundings and looking for, does someone around me look like they feel ill? Watching for people who are about to cough, trying to sort of stay a distance from them. For the most part, these droplets that carry the disease travel no more than about 6, maybe 10 feet at most. So if you're maintaining that distance from people, you're pretty well protected from their coughing and sneezing. The only part you have then to worry about are surfaces. And you have near complete control over that. So if you are just careful with your hands, washing your hands frequently, not touching what we call mucous membranes like your mouth and nose and eyes, then you're going to protect yourself well from that as well. We're not recommending, because he specifically asked, and I think it's a really important question too, about the masks. We're not recommending to the general public to wear the mask for a couple of reasons. One thing that we do find is people that wear what we call personal protective equipment who aren't used to wearing it sometimes will expose themselves to greater risk than they would have without it because of a false sense of security. So we don't want that to happen. We also, the masks have a real specific purpose. And the simple mask that you typically see people wearing that we'll call a surgical mask really isn't intended to protect the wearer particularly well. It does provide some protection, but we don't know exactly how much. The masks that we talk about for healthcare providers are primarily the N95 masks, or that tight-fitting mask. And those have to be professionally fit tested to you to make sure that they are providing you that protection. But again, they're in extremely limited supply. Most of the time, they don't provide the protection to non-healthcare providers that they think they do, because people will do things like reach up under their mask to scratch their nose or something like that, and then you might as well not have the mask on. So those are not recommended by the CDC or the Ohio Department of Health or any of the hospitals or healthcare providers in this region. It's really back to the basics, those things like that 6 to 10 foot social distancing, hand washing, cough hygiene. All of those things are really the important part to keep yourself safe if you decide that you do need to go to a crowded area.
Our phone number again, 513-419-7100. Ashton has a question. Hi, Ashton. What's your question?
Hi. So I have two jobs. I work in the food industry. And I know we're not supposed to come into work when we're sick anyway, but a lot of us don't have time off or can afford not to come into work. If I were to get this, I wouldn't come into work. However, I feel like I would need to seek out a test or, like, proof that I have COVID-19 in order not to get fired.
So,
and I don't know.
What's your question there?
Like, so, like, if we're not supposed to go to the doctor necessarily unless we're, like, critically ill or, like, we feel like it's necessary, for me, I feel like it would be necessary just to get proof. So where should we go get tested for it if we suspect we have it on that also so I don't lose my job?
What should people do? Because a lot of times jobs do require a doctor's signature to say, yes, this person is sick and this is why they've missed work. And if you tell them not to go to the doctor, because in the long run that could be more complicating. Dr. Calhoun, what do you recommend?
Yeah, that's a really important question, too. It's kind of a catch-22 if you look at how our systems usually work. If you look at CDC guidance, ODH guidance, the things that are coming down, one of the things that is being encouraged of employers is to evaluate those policies and possibly in the setting of the current environment, changing those policies to not require things like a work note that would encourage somebody who otherwise doesn't really need to be moved into the healthcare system and take up those resources and expose themselves to other sick people and expose other people to their illness. To try and discourage them from needing to have that note, as well as finding alternative ways of doing that, looking for ways of having people who can work possibly from home. Obviously, in the food service industry, it's a little bit hard to do that for many physicians, as it is with healthcare. But there are a lot of protocols out there, a lot of requests being made by the governing agencies and with recommendations to find ways to relieve some of the burden of on workers when they are doing the responsible thing and not bringing an illness into the workplace. So I feel the difficulty there. One thing I would recommend to employees is to check with their employer, because I suspect that a lot of employers have heeded these warnings and recommendations and have taken that to heart and done the right thing and made some changes there. So certainly checking in with your employer to see if those changes have been and seeing if there is some alternative to sort of previous practices, I think is probably the most prudent thing to do at this point.
Ashton, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. I do want to ask, do you have any advice for people that do work with food, how to make sure they aren't? I mean, I know they have practices they take in place on a regular basis in terms of wearing gloves, pulling your hair back. Some places have hair nets. Do you have any additional advice for food workers and how can they can do a better job of protecting the food that they're working with?
Sure. So I think the best way to answer that is not so much that the food service workers need to know anymore, because they, by and large, do a great job with that. They know all their rules. They follow those rules. I think the real answer to that question is some reassurance to the listeners who aren't part of that, to recognize that the things that they do normally are the right things. So that's one of the things that I think is being missed a little bit by a lot of folks with regards to this virus is the standard practices that we have of cleaning things and protecting things. Well, those are the right things. We just, as average day citizens, a lot of times don't do the things that we should be doing, right? We don't resist the urge to touch our faces. We don't cover our coughs and sneezes with our elbows. We do go around touching things and not washing our hands as often as we should. So it's not so much that the food service workers need to do something different than they always should be. They should just continue to do the things that they always should be doing. Just like the environmental services worker in your facility, in our healthcare facility, there isn't anything extra that they really need to be doing to clean these things. They just need to be doing the things that they normally do and doing them well. And the public needs to just recognize that there isn't something special about the spread of this that requires changes in practices. For the most part, it's mostly about just enforcing practices that we really should be doing.
We now go to Maria with a question. Maria, what's your question?
Hi, I am a cleaning professional, so I'm in people's homes every day, and I'm starting to get people that are concerned about making sure that I'm not bringing anything into their home, and they're not leaving me with anything from their home. So now I walk in, I already wear a face mask of my own, like a sports mask, just to keep myself from getting stuff in my face before this all came about. And then I take like a disinfectant, and then I wipe everything down, and then I re-disinfect everything. Is that a good process? And then what else should I be doing? Oh, I also wear gloves constantly.
Suggestions, doctor?
Well, I think that if the employer recommends the face mask, I wouldn't want to contradict that. For the most part, the face mask that we're talking about there probably isn't going to protect from the kinds of things that people think that it's protecting them from. That kind of face mask, what it really does is, so we might wear one as a healthcare provider, that simple surgical mask, as we're examining a patient. I wear that because if I'm leaned in listening to a patient's lungs and they cough, well, that cough comes straight at me and that mask blocks that cough from getting on me. It really doesn't protect me from the stuff floating around in the air. So unless there's someone else in this house that's coughing on the collar, that mask probably isn't going to do a lot of protection. And as long as the collar isn't then coughing, sneezing, those kinds of things, and then leaving that on surfaces, it doesn't do a lot there. If she were to be ill, again, the primary recommendation would be not to be going into other people's homes while ill and coughing on things. The mask would provide some protection there, but that's not the best protection. The best protection is to not bring that cough into someone's house. For the most part, if she's doing her standard precautions, the standard things she would do to clean things, washing her hands, cleaning surfaces appropriately, not being coughed on, those kind of things, there isn't really a change from standard practice that's necessary to protect her or to protect the homeowners.
Maria, thank you so much for your call. We certainly appreciate it. Dr. Calhoun, I do have a question in terms of just cleaning your home. She brings up some really good points about she's going into homes and cleaning and people are concerned. But what should people be doing in their homes? I know people generally think they're probably pretty clean, but should we be going to extra extremes right now in terms of cleaning counters, preparing food in our own homes?
You know, it's probably more about what you're doing at baseline, but certainly a little more cleaning has rarely hurt anyone. There is certainly the possibility that if you were touching surfaces on your way home and then you came in and touched your counter, you could certainly put some sort of some virus or contaminated water droplets there onto your counter that you could then wash your hands, later touch that counter again, and then touch your mouth and possibly infect yourself. But in the home, as long as you don't have someone else that's sick there, your usual practices are probably sufficient, though wiping down high-touch surfaces with some sort of a EPA-approved cleanser is certainly reasonable. But that's usually whatever cleanser you would normally be using in the home.
Now, what if somebody is sick in your home? And say you're a family of four and one person is sick. What should you do to try? My husband and I were talking about it and said, you know, are we just destined? If one's got it, the other one will get it? Or is there something you really can do to try to prevent that contamination or that contagiousness from one to another?
You're certainly at higher risk. If there's someone in your house that's coughing, that has shortness of breath, that has the fever, you're definitely at more risk. That said, in the majority of homes in the United States, you can usually find ways, if you're careful and think about it, to abide by those kinds of isolation rules of maintaining that 6 to 10 feet between people, because outside of that 6 to 10 feet range, you really don't need extra protective equipment. And then just being very, very diligent. In that case, you really do need to be more vigilant than usual about wiping down surfaces, trying to maintain the sick individual in the smallest portion of the house possible to try to maintain the health of the others, trying not to obviously share food or glasses. That would be the last thing you'd want to do. And then just being very careful with high-touch surfaces, handrails, counters, doorknobs, keyboards, those kind of things, to either don't share those or just frequently wipe them down. But you are right. That becomes much more complicated, but it is still manageable.
I want to thank you so much for being here today. You've really cleared up a lot of things and provided us with some great information.
Absolutely. We're happy to help. We just want to make sure that everyone has a good understanding of this, because I think with a good understanding, it comes with a lot of a calming effect as well.
I've been talking with Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Medical Director for Emergency Management at UC Health, Dr. Dustin Calhoun. Next, we'll be talking with Deputy Director of the Hamilton County Board of Elections, Sally Crissel. Tuesday is primary election day in Ohio, but the outbreak of the coronavirus has affected how the day will go. Sally Crissel on the line now from the Hamilton County Board of Elections. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Good. This is not like any other election that you've probably been part of.
No, this has certainly been an interesting curveball.
So tell us what's happening. What are you doing to prepare for Tuesday's election?
Well, we had already started preparing under some of the instructions we received from the CDC when we opened for voting over 3 weeks ago, and when we started our poll worker training classes. We've been wiping down surfaces, door handles, equipment, the e-poll books, everything that a voter would use when they come in to vote, and everything that poll workers use when they're going through training classes. We also have hand sanitizers available at all stations here, and our staff is required to wash their hands on a regular basis. So we started doing this about 3 weeks ago, and we've been continuing it. We also planned for kids to go out to polling places so that poll workers would have access to the same types of materials to make sure that they can wipe down tables, chairs, et cetera, and the equipment and the e-poll books as voting occurs during Election Day.
Now, one of the things that's happened, though, is you've had to change some of your polling sites because senior centers and nursing homes and those sorts of places, the Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, said don't have any polling places there. So how has that process gone?
So Monday, we did receive notification from the Secretary of State and the governor that we needed to move all of our polling places that were in residential senior citizen facilities. Those are 26 of those polling places in Hamilton County. We immediately moved them, relocated them to the nearest already operating polling location, redesigned all the equipment that we needed to do for that, notified poll workers. And then, of course, one of the bigger issues is all of the people who live in those facilities who would be voting from those facilities on Election Day. We sent out staff with absentee ballot application forms to all of those locations Tuesday. Many of the facilities have sent those applications back. We're processing those for voting. We also are picking up any that did not come back automatically. And we are making the ballots for those voters, taking those ballots to those facilities, and then we will pick them up when the voters are done voting them.
So how much do you think all of this is going to affect the turnout for the election?
Well, it's really, really hard to tell. We're not sure. So far we've seen a really strong turnout for the primary with absentee voting and with early in-person voting. We've seen in the last 2 days an enormous amount of people who want to come here and vote because they maybe don't want to go to their polling place on Election Day. But we want to remind voters that the polling places on Election Day are fairly small groups of people that are there at a time, and voters come in, vote, and leave. And that all of our poll workers will, of course, be following all the CDC procedures with respect to wiping down equipment, tables, chairs, washing their hands, and we'll have hand sanitizers, and we'll also have gloves available at the polling locations.
Is it too late to ask for an absentee ballot at this point?
It is not. We're running up against a timetable. You have to have an application, and you have to complete the application, get it to us, and then we'll mail the ballot. Applications can be accepted up to noon on Saturday. However, we are also open for voting, and our hours are 8 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night today and tomorrow. Saturday we're open 8 to 4. Sunday we're open 1 to 5, and Monday we're open 8 to 2.
And this is at the Board of Elections in Norwood?
Correct.
Some are wondering, what about the pens and the pencils that people use? Can they bring in their own if they don't want to touch the ones that are there?
They certainly can. We, of course, are wiping the styluses that people use on the e-poll books. We're wiping down pens that people are using. But if someone wants to bring their own black or blue ink pen, they should go ahead and do that.
And what other items do you think, do you have any concern about poll workers? I know a number of your poll workers tend to be in some of the high-risk categories. Do you have enough people to work the polls?
We've had several people who have opted out for this election, and that's really understandable considering the age of our poll workers. We are recruiting more and more poll workers as we go. Right now, our director, Sherry Poland, is with the county officials, and they are making an appeal to county workers to come in and volunteer as poll workers. And we set up additional classes to run for poll worker training on Sunday and on Monday just for that. We also have had a lot of people who've called in and said, I'll do it, you know. So it's kind of cutting both ways. And again, we're going to work with anybody who wants to go to and work the polls, and we'll also understand if people don't want to do it this time.
Very good. So you think you're ready to go then? You will be ready for Tuesday?
We have to be. Yes, we're ready to go. I mean, you know, I think this is a shaky time for everybody. Obviously, our own staff are nervous. Voters coming in are nervous. Poll workers are nervous. But there are precautions that people can take, and we will have those out at the polling places. We have our staff trained to understand what to do in certain circumstances. So, you know, democracy is important, and we want to make sure that it goes off as safely as it can for everyone.
And very quickly, do you think this is a trial run for November?
Every election is different. So who knows what to expect in November. But we would love to see everybody get out and vote.
Sally, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Aunt Marianne.
We've been talking with Deputy Director of the Hamilton County Board of Elections, Sally Crissel. Producer for today's show was Elise Meckler. Assistant producer was Selena Reeder. They get extra bonus points today for pulling this together in a hurry, as we realize this is an important topic we wanted to get on today. Today's technical director was Dave Shermer. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.